indicating that the killer had a knowledge of human anatomy. The Black Dahlia was a celebrity who was mutilated and found drained of blood with a haunted-like smile carved on her face. Soon after posting the photo, investigators believe the girls were approached by a man who then went on to kill them. I'm your host, Rihanna Miller, and you're listening to Mystery Mondays. Listener discretion is advised. This episode and next episode, we will be talking about the cases of Denise Haraway and Debbie Carter. Both of these cases can be related, and in both cases, innocent men were convicted. It's a little bit different than what we normally do on this podcast, but we're going to be trying this out. And it's a very interesting case, and also the Netflix documentary, The Innocent Man, was based on these cases. In the first episode, we are going to be talking about Debbie Carter. Warning, this case is very gruesome, and even those who investigated the case were sick. Listener discretion is advised. The day was December 8th, 1982. Carter's lifelong friend Donna Johnson went to Carter's home to surprise her when something wasn't right. Johnson stepped in glass as she walked up the stairs to Carter's apartment. She noticed the front screen door to the apartment was open and the window in the front door had been broken out. Johnson heard the radio playing and found the front door to be unlocked. When Carter did not answer, Johnson looked inside and saw the apartment was a mess. Sofa cushions and clothes were thrown on the floor. Written on the wall was "Jim Smith, next will die." Written on the kitchen table was "Don't look for us or else." And "for" was spelled F-O-R-E and "else" was spelled E-A-L-S-E, which is very interesting. The victim's jeans and a blouse were found on the kitchen floor. This is the part where I remind the listener, if you cannot handle gore, please skip ahead to
4 minutes and 2 seconds
for a quick summary of what occurred without the details of the scene. Listener discretion is advised. The victim's bedroom shows signs of a struggle. Her bed was out of place, pushed up against the door, almost blocking the entry to the room. A bloody palm print was discovered on the wall approximately 18 inches from the floor. Carter was found on the floor on the far side of the bedroom, laying on her stomach, nude except for one sock covering her foot and a bracelet on her wrist. On her back was written "Duke Graham" in ketchup. On her chest was the word written "die" in fingernail polish. A blood-soaked washcloth was stuffed in her mouth and down her throat. A belt and electrical cord from the electric blanket were found underneath the body. Next to the body was a crumpled bedsheet, and inside that sheet was a ketchup bottle missing the lid. During the autopsy, numerous fresh bruises and scrapes were found on the victim's face, on her forehead, right above her right eye, along her right cheek, along the left side of her mouth, and under her chin, and on the back of her neck. Bruises and bite marks were found inside her mouth and on her tongue. A narrow ligature mark was found around her neck. Fresh bruises were also found on her chest, arms, hips, knees, and on the inside and outside of her thighs. Fresh bruises were also found in her vaginal area. Also, the lid to the ketchup bottle was found in her anal canal. The washcloth I mentioned earlier was in her mouth and was found to have been pushed so far down that it was blocking her airway. The medical examiner testified that the victim's injuries were inflicted prior to her death. He determined the cause of her death was asphyxiation from the ligature strangulation. Here's a quick recap for those who had skipped forward. The house was in a disarray, of course, and the victim was found in a very horrible stance with words written all over in ketchup and stuff written on her body in ketchup and nail polish, and was found to most likely have died from strangulation, but many things had happened prior to her death to her. Testimony from an expert on the crime scene reconstruction showed a substantial amount of time had been taken from the perpetrators to stage the crime scene to make it look like two people were involved in the crime. Evidence offered to support this testimony, including glass broken both on the inside and outside of the window in the apartment front door, and the writing on the victim and the wall on the kitchen table. Let's get into the trial and the wrongful convictions. In 1988, Ronald Williams and Dennis Fritz were convicted of the murder of Debbie Carter. Both Fritz and Williamson were found guilty in 1988. Williamson received the death sentence, while Fritz was sentenced to life without parole. The evidence included in their testimonies was hair analysis, which is now regarded as unreliable. The experts concluded that 13 of the 17 hairs that were found at the crime scene were microscopically consistent with those of Fritz and Williamson, and alleged that one of them was a match. The defense failed to point out that although the hair samples could have implicated the pair, they equally could have cleared them both. Despite his rapidly failing mental health, no motion was made to the essences of William's contents. After their sentencing, a confession by a man named Ricky Joe Simmons, Williamson became increasingly convinced that Simmons had committed the murder and repeatedly demanded his arrest, although Simmons was never charged. At one time on September 22, 1994, Williamson was only 5 days away from being executed, when the execution was stayed by the court following the habeas corpus petition.
Here are some audio clips from the documentary trailer for The Innocent Man on Netflix.
How close did you come to being executed?
5 days.
The fact that your life can be taken away that easy is horrifying.
After 11 years on death row and following several appeals, Williamson and Fritz were cleared by DNA testing and were finally freed on April 15, 1999.
The Innocent Man also happens to be a book that is about the two cases that we're speaking about right now. And after the book was the Netflix documentary that came out in December of 2018, The Innocent Man, that talks about the book and the cases as well. Here's a little snippet of audio from John Grimson, the man who wrote The Innocent Man.
I practiced law for 10 years in a small town in Mississippi, and I had murder cases and, you know, all different types of criminal cases. And I never saw the police and prosecutors act the way they did in this book. They were pretty straight-up guys, and I think that's the case. That's the way it normally is. And I was astounded when I got into Ron's case and saw the sloppiness of the police and the inability, almost the willingness to ignore the real killer and pursue two men who were completely innocent. It opened up my eyes, the book opened up my eyes into the world of wrongful convictions, and it made me realize that there are a lot of innocent people in prison. You know, most police investigators and most prosecutors are honorable men who try to find the right criminals. But wrongful convictions happen all the time in our country, and so many of them could be prevented. Ron's on death row for 12 years, completely innocent. His best friend across the hallway, Greg Wilhoit, spent 4 years on death row, and he was completely innocent. They support each other and probably, you know, help save each other's lives.
In 2003, they sued the city of Ada and won a settlement of $500,000. The state of Oklahoma also settled out of the court for an undisclosed amount.
So both these men had just won a settlement of $500,000 plus the undisclosed amount from Oklahoma. But can all this money really be worth the amount of time that they spent in jail is the question. Having your life taken away from you for a decade and a little longer than a decade is a lot. I don't think $500,000 can make up for that, because that's life that you can't get back. And I don't think that amount of money can help with the grief of not having that time anymore.
Many of the residents in Ada continue to believe that Williamson and Fritz were guilty long after they were exonerated. Indeed, both men reportedly felt it necessary to be very wary of their release, such that their beliefs that the prosecutor, Bill Peterson, and other officials of the Ada police would try to bring them to trial again. Glenn Gore, an Ada man who had testified against both Williamson and Fritz, was ultimately convicted for the murder of Debbie Carter. He was the last person seen with Carter and also had been seen arguing with her on the night of her death. Although he was interviewed by police, he was not fingerprinted, nor did he give saliva and hair samples. While Williamson and Fritz were incarcerated, Gore was also imprisoned on another unrelated violent crime conviction. Once Williamson and Fritz had been cleared of murder, Gore eventually came to trial based on the same DNA evidence that had cleared Fritz and Williamson. The evidence proved that it was Gore's DNA that was left at the scene. On June 24, 2003, Gore was convicted of first-degree murder and sentenced to death. But his death sentence was overturned in August of 2005. He was eventually convicted at his second trial on June 21st of 2006 and sentenced to life without parole, which was required by law due to a jury deadlock on sentencing. The first part of this two-part podcast talks about the murder of Debbie Sue Carter and the wrongful convictions of Ron Williamson and Dennis Fritz. On the next episode, we are going to be talking about the more gruesome murder of Denise Haraway and the wrongful convictions of Tommy Ward. You're listening to 91.3 WHJE, and this has been another episode of Mystery Mondays.